Accession number 4582, Reel 1.
Mr. Buckley, Reel 1. When did you first join the RAF, Mr. Buckley?
Well, actually, it was in 1919. I was then working at the Wrexham and Acton Colliery. And we were on night work at the time. And my friend, who I regret to say is now dead, there were three of us, decided that we'd had enough of working down the coal mines. We decided to find a way in which we could get away from it. So we decided to join the RAF. Well, we went to work on the Friday night, came home on Saturday morning. I never said anything to my family, and I arranged to meet my two friends in Wrexham at the recruiting office for the RAF. Well, we got down there somewhere around about 10 o'clock, I presume, and we went into the recruiting office. They asked us a few questions that we actually told them what they wanted to know. And then we filled some forms in and we were given a railway warrant to go to Liverpool, to the recruiting office at Liverpool.
Before we go on to you going to Liverpool, could I go back to something you said?
Yes.
You said that you wanted to get out of mining.
Yes.
But why did you choose the RAF as a method of getting out of mining?
Well, actually, I chose the RAF because our life in Wales at that time, I was born there in 1900, and I went to a Church of England school, and the education was nil. I mean, the highest standard was 5, and it was difficult, you see. Times were pretty hard at that time with miners because the money was very, very poor. And I lost my mother when I was 3. My father, I don't know what happened to him. I never did find out what happened to my father. So I went to live with my grandmother. When my mother died, my grandmother took my eldest sister and I into custody, and I lived with my grandmother until I was 19. And my sister, she got married, and then she left when she was 20, I think, 20-odd. Anyway, we decided, as I said, there was nothing, and the only thing we could think of to get out was to get into either the Army or the Air Force. So we decided to go into the Air Force.
Did you prefer the idea of the Air Force to the Army?
Yes, I did, actually.
Why was that?
Well, I suppose it's just being young and active. I thought it would be more interesting, and I think that the time would be easier spent than it was in the Army, and I'd learn more with being in the RAF. Which eventually I found out that I did. I did learn quite a lot during my travels with the RAF.
The RAF had only been formed a year when you joined,
hadn't it? It was the Royal Flying Corps before.
Did the fact that it was a new service make any difference to your decision?
No. It's just that they changed the name of it, you see, from the Royal Flying Corps to Royal Air Force. And at that particular time, we were wearing khaki, and we used to have breeches and putties. And then if I remember rightly, there was some controversy about putties, wearing putties, that it was one of the causes of varicose veins. I don't know whether this is true or not, it's just what I heard, that the Army and the Air Force decided that breeches and putties were out, and we went to wearing slacks.
Was the uniform of breeches and putties a popular one with the men or not?
Well, it's hard to say, because you found out that the putties they used to issue were very difficult to put on. And then there was the name of Fox, I think, used to make Fox's putties, which were more elasticity than the others, and they were easy to put on, and you didn't have to put them on so tightly.
When did these Fox's putties come in?
I haven't the foggiest idea. I know it was when I was in the Air Force that came in. And that's what we used to wear. And then they decided, after a time, we wear breeches and puttees for quite a long time. Then they decided, well, slacks on all. We had khaki slacks for working in and blue slacks for going out.
Were the slacks more popular when they came in?
Oh, yes. I think so, yes.
Why was that?
Well, it was easier to get dressed, for one thing. You didn't have to bother putting putties on. Be careful how you put them on, tie them a certain way, and all that. And the breeches, they were not so nice as the slacks. I did have a photograph of myself taken in breeches and putties, but I've mislaid it somewhere. I can't tell you. But I have a photograph here that was taken later on. That was taken during the last war. And that one was taken, as you see on the back, the stamp is Baghdad. And that was when I was out in Baghdad.
So when you were in Baghdad, you used to wear collarless shirts, did you?
Yes, because it was very hot then. It was, I think most of the times in the summer, midsummer, it was about 120 in the shade.
What other differences in uniform were there when you were in Iraq?
Well, we just had shorts and those open neck shirts and light tunics. In the winter time, we wore our ordinary stuff, you know. We had slacks, khaki slacks.
Was the uniform suitable for Iraqi conditions?
Oh, yes. We were kitted out with the special kit, you see. When we went to, I think the kit is out at M Squadron at Uxbridge. Special kits, for Iraq. And Egypt and all those places. You had a special kit for it.
What did you wear on your head?
About topies.
Well, do you think they were necessary?
Oh, definitely. They were a godsend.
Why was that?
On account of the terrific heat. Because one thing you must protect out in that heat is the back of your neck. And the topi was ideal for that.
Did you have the spine pad?
No, we just had the topi that came down the back. It comes right down the back of the shoulders. It's a big peak at the back, not in the front. Keep the sun off your neck.
Maybe we can go back to what you were saying before about how you were describing how you enlisted, and you'd got up to how you received a railway warrant to go to Liverpool.
To go to Liverpool.
What happened then?
Well, from Liverpool, we were sent down to Henlow in Bedfordshire. That was a depot where we were sworn in the service. And a rather remarkable thing happened there. We three of us was together one evening, and we were fed up with walking about, doing nothing, and it came to a toss-up. Should we go back before we sign on, you see? Shall we go back, make our way back to North Wales? Because we didn't seem to be, you know, so enthusiastic about it.
Why was that?
I don't know. Something, I suppose, we didn't like the look of the camp, something like that. Something sort of put us against it. And then, actually, we did decide to walk back. So we started on this journey to walk back. And that fell through too. We lost heart there, so we turned back again and went back to the depot, and we really signed on, and that was it. Finished. We were in the Air Force. And on the following weekend, we were sent to, on the Monday, we were sent down to Uxbridge. And that was the depot where we were training.
What was the training like?
Training was very nice. We thrilled with it, I was anyway, because it was only square bashing for the first few weeks. But then, I don't know whether it was a miraculous thing as far as I was concerned, but I think that there was a strike came on in January, I think it was.
Who was on strike?
I don't know. That there was a general strike, I know, somewhere, something. Then they couldn't get coal or anything like that. And they called out for volunteers at the RAF depot. They called out for volunteers for clerical work. Well, naturally, as I said, our education wasn't too great in North Wales and the church schools. Anyway, I took a chance and put my name down for this, you see. And lo and behold, I got through. And I was immediately posted from Uxbridge to Aircraft Council Inspection, which was then stationed at which was Croydon Aerodrome.
The inspection squadron?
Yeah, it was at Croydon in 1919.
What was this inspection squadron?
Well, I don't know why they called it inspection squadron, but I'm trying to think who the officer was, but they had machines there. They had Bristol fighters. I'm sure they had Bristol fighters there then. The aerodrome was at Plough Lane in Croydon, and Plough Lane then went right through the middle of this aerodrome, and the billets were on one side of it, one side of Plough Lane, and the aerodrome was on the other side, so we had to cross over the road to get into the aerodrome. It was only a small field. Now, I was there in January. I was there in December, actually. And then they decided that it was being handed over to the civil authorities in January, and I was one of the last ones to leave there, handing it over to the police, which it then became Croydon Aerodrome.
What were your duties as a clerk at that time?
Well, actually, they put me in the pay office at first, and naturally I didn't like that at all, so I asked if I could be removed on something else.
Why didn't you like it in the pay office?
Well, I hadn't had the education in figures, for one thing. It was a struggle for me to keep up with it. And I like to be able to do things. If I can't do them, then I don't want to bother about them. So I went and saw we used to call them sergeant majors in that time, but now they changed the name later on to warrant officers. But they were sergeant majors, the same as they were in the army. Anyway, they changed the name so I'll refer to them now as warrant officers, because that is the rank at the moment, I think, as far as I know. Anyway, I asked him if I could, you know, change my job, as I didn't like this business. I wasn't educated enough for it. And he said, well, what would you like to do? He said, you know anything about telephones? I said, no. He said, well, how would you like to be a telephonist? I said, well, I don't mind. I'll try it. So that's where I started. I started off on the telephone exchange. And from then on, I could never leave telephones. It's been with me all my life until I retired. I started there at Croydon Aerodrome on the telephones. And when Croydon Aerodrome was handed over to the civil authorities, I was posted to Kenley Aerodrome. And I went on the telephone exchange there. And I was on that telephone exchange until I was sent overseas in 1921, September 1921.
Did the work involve just switchboard work?
All switchboard work.
Just for the internal?
Internal and external. We had direct lines to most of the squadrons, you know. We used to have what they call tie lines to all the direct squadrons, you know, Manston and all those places. Manston was one of the aerodromes at that particular time.
Did you have any drills or anything like that, or did you...
Oh, we had drill, Actually, I think this is another miraculous thing that happened to me. I think I was one of the only persons in the Air Force, as far as I can recollect, that never had strict training on rifle drill.
Why was that?
Because I left before the rifle came in on clerical work, you see, during this strike. And it was only when I got to Baghdad that they found out this, that I hadn't had any rifle drills.
So what did they do?
I soon found out in a fortnight that I could use a rifle.
They gave you an intensive course on it?
Actually, what happened was I was put on a 12-hour guard. This actually happened. It's no joke. And I fell in with rifle and bayonet. The officer was there, the NCO, and they fall in the ranks, and then they give you fixed bayonets, and the right-hand man used to take so many paces forward, and you have to watch him. You put your hand on your bayonet, you see, And when he moves, you pull it up and fix it onto the end of the rifle. And you keep your hand there until the man on the right in front pulls his hand back and you spring to attention. I got through that part okay. And then the NCO gave us slope arms. And that was a tragic thing for me. I sloped arms, and as I threw it onto my shoulder, off went the bayonet. So naturally, I was pulled over the coals for it. And I explained to them why I hadn't done any rifle drill. Anyway, I had some drill after that, and everything was all right. But fortunate for me, in my job, most times we were when you're on clerical work like that, on telephone work, you were excused guards. And that's how I got away with it. I was excused guards until that particular time. But it was really funny. It wouldn't have been funny at the time if there'd have been anyone behind me, because they might have got the bayonet.
You said that after you'd been at Croydon, you were posted to Kenley.
Yes.
Which squadron was there?
24 Squadron.
What was 24 Squadron like in those days?
Very, very good.
Why do you say that?
Because there had some very good pilots there. I think there was one there by the name of Leroy, his name was, and unfortunately, he was killed.
How?
Accident. Crashed.
Did you see the crash?
I didn't actually see the crash, but I heard about it, because I was on the drone there. He crashed on the end of the aerodrome into a house, I think, or something, or a shed. And he was flying DH-9As at the time. He was a very good pilot on DH-9As. That's where he crashed. And, as I say, in September 1921, I was on a draft for overseas. I didn't know where I was going at the time.
Before we go on to your posting overseas, could I ask you a little more about Kenley? What did the airmen think of the DH-9A?
Well, it was a very good plane at that time. They were fairly reliable, and they were very manoeuvrable, especially some of the pilots who really were masters at it. It was quite a heavy plane. To me, it appeared to be nose-heavy because I think it was a 400-horsepower Liberty engines, I think, they used to use in them. And it seemed to have such a long nose, you know, away from the planes. And to me, it always seemed as though it was nose-heavy.
Did any of the crews complain about that?
No, I don't think any of them complained because it was quite good engines.
What about the markings on the plane? Did 24 Squadron have any special markings?
No, not to my knowledge. I don't remember any special markings. We used to have the target marking, you know. That's all.
What was Kenley Aerodrome like? Can you describe it?
Oh, yes, it was a very nice place. It's on top of a hill, because it's near Caterham Valley, and the valley, as they called Caterham Valley, it's a valley right from Caterham, and you go right away into Purley, which is about 5 miles away, and it's all a valley right down there. Now, Kenley Aerodrome was on the top of this valley. Coming from Purley to Kenley, it would be on the right-hand side, but going to Purley, it was on the left-hand side of the road, the main road, Brighton, the Eastbourne Road, it is called. Going an Eastbourne Road. And it's up, and it was the most difficult aeroplane to land on in the winter.
Why was that?
Because you're coming in and you're coming over a valley. And if it's a bit foggy, it was deceiving, you want to be very extremely careful. Because I think this one... There's one other private aerodrome that belongs to the airlines, I think, in Isle of Wight. No, Jersey, my mistake. Jersey, not the Isle of Wight, Jersey. Now, I don't know, if you've ever been to Jersey, when you're landing, you're landing as though you're going to go into the cliffs. It's on top of the cliffs, and you're landing like that, into the cliffs. And it's very frightening, you know, until you get used to it. Well, Penley Aerodrome is a sort of similar thing. You see, you're going over a valley, you see. I don't know whether it does make any difference to the height altimeters when you go over a valley, whether your height is from the bottom of the valley, and it shows on there, and then you come to a sudden hill at the top. Whether it drops so quickly, I don't know. But it seemed to be very, very, you know, tricky landing on there in the wintertime.
Were you ever taken up at Kenley?
Yes, once.
How did that come about?
Well, we used to go up as ballast. If the firing officer was going up, he hadn't got any passengers, you know, you could ask him, could I come up as ballast? He said yes. He'd take you up if you wanted to.
Did the...
You went up at your own risk, of course.
Did the ground staff enjoy going up?
Oh, yes, most of them used to like to at least experience the flying. I think through that, some of them became aerial gunners, you know, they liked the flying, so they put their names down to be an aerial gunner. I didn't myself, because I wasn't so keen. I liked it at first, and I also flew in when I was in Baghdad on a special trip.
What was the accommodation and the facilities like for the airmen at Kenley?
Well, they were pretty good. We had huts, you know, with stoves in the middle and beds. But Uxbridge, when I first went to Uxbridge, it was a bit, we used to have three biscuits and bedboards on the small trestles, and that's what we had there to sleep on. They weren't very, you know, comfortable, but one gets used to them. Then they started, we got to Kenley, we got spring beds, iron beds, that sort of business.
What was the discipline like in the RAF at that time?
Well, the discipline was fairly strict. I mean, you're in the service, and in all services, the discipline has to be strict. But one realizes that when you get in there, because you cannot control any crowds unless you've got discipline. But I think it was fair. It was fairly distributed, from what I can gather.
You didn't feel that you were treated unjustly?
No, I didn't feel that at all.
Were you ever punished yourself?
No. Well, I tried my utmost to keep away from that sort of thing, if it was possible. Naturally, I took risks at times, but...
In what way?
Well, breaking into those camps sort of style.
What, after hours?
That's right.
Was that often done?
No, I don't think it was too often done, but I could tell you some funny stories about it, really.
Yes, do.
Well, it might be a bit rude.
That's all right.
Is it? Well, I don't know whether this is a true story, but it's supposed to have happened at Kenley. A lot of the people, when they went back to Kenley Aerodrome, used to walk up Hayes Lane, which is the back end back of the aerodrome, you see. So they wouldn't have to go through the gates. And I don't know whether this is true or not, you see. I don't think it should print it anyway. It may not be true. It's only just a story I heard. And one airman was going up there one night, late at night, and he suddenly had to go to the side of the road and drop his trousers, you see. And he hadn't got any papers, so he used an envelope. And coming up the road the next morning was the warrant officer. He saw this, and he picks his envelope up, looks at it, and wipes it off with grass, puts it in his pocket, and comes on the aerodrome. So, on the parade that morning, the 8 o'clock parade that morning, he takes this envelope out of his pocket, calls up, AC so-and-so and so-and-so. Come here. He walks up, he said, you were at a camp last night? He said, yes, sir. He said, which way did you come in the camp? asked, up Hayes Lane, sir. Oh, does that belong to you? He said, yes, sir. He said, well, the next time you stop to do that, don't leave your card on it. That's the story I heard. I don't know whether it was true, though.
Well, that was the story that went round the barracks, yeah. Wasn't it?
It was funny.
Now, coming on to your overseas posting, how did that come about?
Well, every so often, you see, they pick so many people from squadrons to go overseas. Now, I don't relate this. It's only a surmise on my part, but I don't think I'll say anything about it. Because it's a bit personal.
When you heard that you were going to be posted abroad in 1921, were you glad or not? Did you want to go abroad or
yes,
not?
Yes, I didn't mind at all, because I was interested in seeing parts of the world. You see, I thought, this is the opportunity I've got. And I'd been told by other people that travelling was an education in itself. And believe me, I needed an education. So I was really pleased I was going overseas.
Did you know
for such a short time.
Did you know anything about Iraq before you went?
Nothing at all, not a thing. I didn't even know I was going there till I got there.
So you didn't even know on the troop ship?
I knew we were going out India that way somewhere. Mesopotamia it was called then, by the way. It wasn't known as Iraq, it was Mesopotamia. And I enjoyed the trip out there. I hadn't been on the sea before in my life. And of course, seasickness, that's a terrible thing the first time you have it. But we had quite a smooth journey out there, smooth sailing. We went via Bombay. We called it Bombay, and then we got on a small boat at Bombay to go to Basra. We changed boats at Bombay and went to Basra, down the Persian Gulf. And we passed what they call the 12 Apostles, great big rocks sticking up in the Persian Gulf, so many miles apart from each other, into Basra, the port of Basra.
What was the port of Basra like?
Well, we didn't see much of the Basra. We just got off the port, and then we were driven out to a little, transition camp, in a place called Shaiba, which was just outside Basra. And we had to wait there to be transported by train to Baghdad West.
What was the train journey like?
Well, it was pretty rough because there were more or less cattle trucks, you know.
So you had no seats or anything?
Oh, we had seats sitting on the floor or anything like that. It wasn't like a trail, it was just sort of cattle trucks, you know. You just made the best of it.
What, with straw in it?
No straw.
Just empty cattle truck?
Because the journey didn't take long anyway. It only took a day, just under a day. So we just had to go there as soon as it got us there, you see.
Were officers in the cattle trucks as well?
I never saw any officers. They may have been in there. I think it was shared alike. I don't remember any coaches on there of any description.
Were NCOs in the cattle trucks with you?
Well, I don't know if they were cattle trucks. They were the trucks they used on those journeys. But they weren't like the railway carriages you get in this country. Not by any means.
Were they covered over?
They were covered, yes. Otherwise, you would have been burnt up with it. Although, that's why I think they transferred us in September, because the heat is beginning to subside then, and you're in for a winter period. And that's the time you get acclimatized, because it comes gradually. And by the time the summer comes, you're acclimatized to the heat and the weather. That's the reason I put down to it, when they sent you in September.